Hello and welcome to Quadriga. It is a fateful week for Britain. With just 20 weeks to go until the Brexit deadline and a special EU summit looming this weekend, the UK and the EU finally announced last week that they'd reached a draft agreement. But Prime Minister Theresa May is facing a storm of protest at home, most especially within her own party. In the hours after the deal was announced, several of her own ministers resigned, MPs threatened to bring down the government, parliamentary debate verged on the obstreperous. May defends the deal with equal passion. A special EU summit this coming Sunday is supposed to seal the deal, but it's unclear that May can close on it at home. Brexit, battle for Britain, that's our topic, and here are our guests. It is a pleasure to welcome Alex Forrest-Whiting. She's a DW reporter and a former Westminster political correspondent. She says too many British politicians have seen Brexit as a battle against a European empire in which the plucky Brits would triumph. The reality is very different, and it's now hard to see if there will be any winners at all. And it's a pleasure to welcome Alan Posner back to the show. He is a German-British author who writes for the German newspaper Die Welt. And he says, Brexit is a lose-lose. The deal is bad, but no deal would be worse. And finally, great to have John Wirth on the show. He is a British blogger, a principal advisor and member of the Green Party. He says no one likes May's deal, and Britain leaving the EU with no deal is not an option either, neither for the UK nor for the EU. So better a second referendum and no Brexit. So let me start out by asking you, Alex. You say there are no winners. John says better no Brexit at all. Would you say those sentiments are widely shared by people at home in the UK?
No, I don't think that they are. I think that there are certainly more people who are coming round to the idea that Brexit has clearly not been as straightforward as it was supposed to be and as it was promised to be, and that there are a lot of possibilities that it could all go very, very wrong for the UK. But to say that this is that the whole of the UK is coming round to this idea is not true. It's still very, very divided, both politically, also across the country. I can say from my own point of view, even within families, it's still very divided. There are people who would like to stay within the EU and are very anti-Brexit, and there are people who are absolutely gung-ho that the UK is going to Brexit.
Alan Posner, you say the deal is lose-lose. That opinion is shared by many people who look at the economic implications of Brexit. But the fact is that the single biggest issue for many people who voted to leave was immigration. And doesn't this current withdrawal arrangement that is on the table actually deliver, at least in part, on that aim?
Yes. I mean, if Britain remains in a customs union with the EU, which the deal, which is part of the deal, but is out of the common market, out of the, which entails the free movement of people, then obviously you're going to have less polls, for instance, going back and forth between Britain and Poland, and less other Europeans coming in, and that was a big theme. But so that's why I say this deal. But you can argue. I mean, if it's such a big problem to have a Polish plumber or a Polish barmaid, then you're going to be happy about this deal. I really don't think that, on reflection, the English people, it was the English, not the British as a whole, who were in favour of Brexit. That's not really such a big problem, is it? It's not as if Polish plumbers are taking the jobs away from British plumbers or Polish barmaids are taking the jobs away. And in fact, when there was a crisis a while back, the Poles went back home. That showed how good it is to have an internal market that's actually breathing, as the EU does. But look, yes, this deal delivers on that. So May ought to be able to sell it, but she won't. But let's leave that to later.
John, react to that if you like. But I'd also like to ask you about your opening statements raising the possibility of a second referendum, and the UK, in that case, maybe staying in the EU after all. You're not alone in this. We're hearing a lot of calls for a second referendum. We're hearing more and more people, even Theresa May, saying, look, if this deal breaks down, well, maybe there will be no Brexit at all. New words coming from her. But as I understand it, you are simultaneously applying for German citizenship. So do you really actually believe in that possibility?
I can't count on that. I have to separate my own personal situation from what I think about the political analysis. I'm applying to become German because my own personal future is here. I'm quite at home in Berlin, and therefore I come to terms with becoming German. In terms of the politics of it, I think the second referendum is the least bad outcome. I don't positively welcome such a thing because such a referendum would be very divisive and very difficult, and the time is short. But look at the alternatives. All of the alternatives are worse. Leaving without a deal is disastrous for the British economy. Theresa May's deal pleases no one. The Labour Party will, in any case, vote against whatever is put forward by the Conservatives. And even Theresa May's own party doesn't like what she's negotiated. So out of that situation, I see no way forward other than to essentially say, Westminster is blocked, let's put this issue back to the people in a second referendum. And this time, Britain might actually know what leave means. Because the previous time, we didn't know what leave would entail. Now we know. We know roughly what Theresa May's deal looks like. You put that back to the people. I fear how such a campaign would go. It would be very emotional, very negative. And so that's why I say it's the least worst option. But it's a possible option.
Wouldn't absolutely everything depend on the phrasing of that referendum and how leave... You say everybody would know what leave means. Even after over 2 years of negotiations, it is hard to discern what leave means, frankly.
Well, the question is would it be the Theresa May proposal of how to leave, which you can at least work out roughly how that would work. But ultimately, there are other people who are making other leave arguments. So there has even been the question raised, should you have a three-option referendum and the nightmare that would cause, where you had the Theresa May deal, no deal, crashing out without an arrangement with Brussels, and Remain. But how would you organise such a thing, and would that be actually possible to organise a referendum in that way? But these are the questions which people are posing themselves in Britain.
And we are going to come back to the second referendum idea perhaps a bit later, but let me ask all of you for a straight up and down yes or no answer on this point. Given what the majority voted for in its original referendum nearly 2.5 years ago, isn't this deal that's on the table right now almost as good as it's going to get, Alex?
I think it is as good as it's going to get. I cannot really see what else Theresa May could have got because of Ireland, Northern Ireland.
Right, and we'll come back to that in a moment. Alan?
Totally the same opinion.
I'm of a slightly different opinion because there is a line that the Labour Party has used that no one in the referendum voted to make themselves poorer. And this vote and this deal will make Britain economically poorer because it takes Britain out of the single market.
And that's my immigration point. Is that really the thing that people were so centrally concerned about? Alex, one sentence on Ireland, if you would, because I want to look at Theresa May's dilemma in more detail. But just one sentence on where that problem with Ireland lies, bearing in mind that many of our viewers are not as acquainted with all the details of this as some of us may be.
So the United Kingdom, which is Great Britain and Northern Ireland, that's something that people often make a mistake over. Northern Ireland is joined to the Republic of Ireland. And the Republic of Ireland is obviously in the EU and will stay in the EU. Northern Ireland will leave the EU along with the rest of Britain. And that is the problem because of this so-called hard border between the North and the Republic of Ireland. A big deal also because of the former troubles that they've had within that country, and they do not want in any way to threaten that peace process that was agreed 20 years ago. So it's very, very sensitive.
Right. And Theresa May has the DUP, a Northern Irish party, breathing down essentially her neck. So we're going to look at that in a little more detail. Let's take a look now at what Prime Minister May is facing in the way of opposition within her own ranks.
Brexit means Brexit. Brexit means Brexit, and we're going to make a success of it.
I'm very clear, Brexit does mean Brexit.
When Theresa May became Prime Minister in 2016, she quickly adopted the credo of divorcing the UK from the EU. Formerly opposed to Brexit, she said she wanted to create the best deal possible for Great Britain. To better negotiate with the EU and to keep hardliners in check, she sought stronger backing with a snap general election. She had miscalculated and lost the Conservative majority. Calls for her resignation arose.
Brexit means Brexit.
But Theresa May pushed on and miscalculated again when she underestimated just how hard the EU would negotiate. Her concessions to Brussels caused outrage. There was talk of a vote of no confidence. She lost a number of key ministers. including the Brexit State Secretary Dominic Raab. Yet still, she won't be dissuaded.
This is a deal which does deliver that, which is in the national interest. And am I going to see this through? Yes. Thank you.
Theresa May, an Iron Lady or a tragic figure?
John, interestingly enough, May received some grudging tributes this week, even from her critics. How do you see her as a historical figure? What will the history books write?
I think she will be presented as a prime minister trying to do the best in a very, very difficult situation, leading a divided party where she has been trying to balance what the party needs on one hand and what she thinks the country could manage to live with on the other hand. It's not a job that anyone... that you'd wish on anyone. It's very, very tough. Ultimately, I think she will probably, because I still think Brexit will fail, I think she will probably go down as the prime minister who brought Brexit to failure. But ultimately, is there anything else she could do than the way that she's behaving at the moment? She's actually playing quite a tactically good game in the Conservative Party. She's balancing the pragmatists on one hand and the Brexit radicals on the other, and she's towing a middle line between those groups. And so I think she's actually making a reasonably good effort out of a very, very difficult situation.
Alan, staying with Theresa May, what would you say is the biggest mistake she's made?
The biggest mistake she made was switching from being a Remainer, a convinced Remainer, to suddenly saying Brexit means Brexit. I mean, who believes her? Whatever she does, she's got this stain on her character, as has the whole, almost the whole British political class. They never believed in, I mean, the responsible people never believed in Brexit. Now they're suddenly going on. And by the way, if you had your new referendum, what would all these politicians say who flip-flopped one way and the other? I mean, the whole political class, and that includes Mrs. May, they're simply not convincing, because if you flip-flop, no one knows what you mean. So if she says Brexit means Brexit, what does she mean by Brexit means Brexit? I think she's just a... she's a political... I'm not going to use the word.
Okay.
I think it's interesting with Theresa May, because she, before she became Prime Minister, she was Home Secretary, and she was always...
essentially is the Interior Minister.
So the Interior. And I was in Westminster's political correspondent there, so I had dealings with all these departments. And her department was very interesting, because she is a very shy, awkward politician. And she had these two attack dogs who looked after her and prevented people from really getting to her too much. So it was a very difficult department to penetrate at the time that she was there. She did campaign to remain in the EU, but she was a very reluctant campaigner. She did not particularly want to side with the likes of David Cameron. She only really came out in favour of Remain towards the very end, when she realised what could happen over security if the UK obviously doesn't have the same access. So I think you have to be careful when you say that she's gone from Remain to Brexit. I think she was always a reluctant Remainer, but she's clearly not a Brexiteer and is trying to make the best of a very, very bad situation.
I would love to spend the entire rest of this programme talking about whether it's Nicht Cameron that goes down in the history books as the true villain of this piece, but...
yes.
I think in looking at what Theresa May's biggest mistakes might have been, I would certainly put this strange alliance with the DUP, the party that I mentioned earlier, high up on the list, because in many ways it has brought that Irish dilemma to the fore and in some ways created a situation, a double-bind situation that is almost impossible to solve. Can you just say a word or two about that, John, and whether you see it that way?
I do see that as highly problematic, her relationship with the DUP, but it might ultimately mean that the Irish issue actually could get solved in Brexit in a certain way. The Irish question is much more important now than it would have been had the DUP not been in alliance with
Theresa May.
Because
of the concern about a hard border that would run through the heart of Ireland and thereby once again divide Ireland, possibly even leading to violence.
Right, but the question is ultimately, where do you draw that hard border? Do you draw it between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland? Or do you draw it in the Irish Sea? Or do you not draw a border at all? Those are essentially your options. And as a result of the DUP saying, under no circumstances should Northern Ireland be treated differently than the rest of the UK. It is unacceptable that that border should essentially be in the Irish Sea. As a result of that, that has pushed Theresa May towards a slightly more pragmatic Brexit position by keeping the whole of the UK, temporarily at least, in the EU's customs union. So ultimately, Theresa May's Brexit is a little bit more pragmatic, ultimately, as a result of the role that the DUP has played. Now, you wouldn't actually think that from the hardline vocabulary being used by the DUP, but ultimately, the DUP has pushed Britain towards a slightly more pragmatic Brexit solution than would otherwise have been the case.
But, Alan, that is part of what the Brexiteers, the hardline exit supporters, most hate about this deal. They're worried that this temporary fudge on Ireland, namely by keeping Britain in the customs union temporarily, could become a long-term solution where the UK has the worst of all possible worlds, namely, it's still part of the EU, but it doesn't even have a voice.
Exactly. And they're right, of course. That's exactly... I mean, that's what's going to happen if cool heads prevail, if May gets a deal through, which is by no means certain, we've heard why, but if she got her deal through, that's the only possible situation, because this is, it is, as you say, using these quotation marks, a temporary solution for Britain to stay in the customs union, but for Britain to exit is no longer within Westminster's power. It's going to be decided by European judges as well as the British side. It's going to be a so if the EU says no, you can't leave the customs union, then they crash out. Then you have the same situation they're trying to avoid now further down the line. So I think if May gets a deal through, that means Britain stays in the customs union indefinitely.
And I think the fact that the Brexiteers are so angry and concerned about Northern Ireland and this Irish border, and particularly staying in the customs union, is because so the customs union, this whole idea wouldn't actually kick in until after the transition period, which is where we're sort of in a bit of a fudge until December 2020. It could, of course, be extended, as has possibly been offered by Michel Barnier.
Some people call that kicking the can down the road.
Yeah, kicking the can down the road. And I think the point is that the Brexiteers are so worried now that actually they're not going to be able to agree this free trade agreement with the EU after that has finished, that's why they're worried that this backstop, that this customs union idea is going to happen and they won't be able to ever get out of it. So they will effectively stay in the EU.
Alex, you say you, as a Westminster political correspondent, knew a lot of these figures. We often perceive these hardcore Brexiteers, whether it's Boris Johnson or the others whom we saw in the piece, as essentially acting on some sort of personal opportunistic basis. Is that right or is it too simple?
I'd say that some of them genuinely believe that everything about the EU is wrong and they are ideologically opposed to it. And I can name various ministers who I have spoken to over the years who really, really dislike the EU and think that the UK needs its sovereignty back, they need to get out. There are others, and I would say Boris Johnson is a good example of an opportunist, because actually, you may remember a couple of years ago, he wrote an article for one of the English newspapers, the Daily Telegraph, in which he said, actually, I'm going to back Brexit. But he'd also written The Other Side, which also got out. Okay. So he wasn't even clear, and he has chosen the path to be a Brexiteer and to lead from the front, but actually, I'm not convinced. And just look at what happened to his brother, who was in the government until 2 weeks ago, Joe Johnson. He quit his government role, saying that he not only opposes Brexit, but he wants there to be a second referendum. So even within Boris Johnson's own family, it is very divided.
Before we take a look at where it all goes from here, let's take a look at the EU side in all of this. Alex just reminded us that the Brexiteers say everything about the EU is wrong. From the start, the European Union has made it clear that certain core EU principles, like the link between free movement of goods and free movement of labour, were non-negotiable. Nonetheless, EU leaders say that the deal that's now on the table does reflect concessions on both sides. Let's take a look.
Any deal is better than no deal. I think that is the order of the day. We have to advertise that the deal on the table now is the best possible deal. I think there's no better option for this crazy Brexit.
Der Kompromiss,
The Brexit compromise currently on the table is truly that, a compromise. Both sides have made concessions, and I hope that everyone deals with it responsibly now.
We are, in fact, at the decisive moment in this process. No one should lose sight of the progress that we have been achieved in Brussels and in London.
The EU is prepared for a final deal with the United Kingdom in November. We are also prepared for a no-deal scenario. But of course, we are best prepared for a no-Brexit scenario.
Ellen, a number of European Union leaders made it clear from the start that they thought we need to make an example of Britain in order to prevent other countries from going down the same path, from trying to leave the EU. If that tough negotiating stance that has been taken thwarts Theresa May's efforts to get buy-in, won't Europeans also pay a price?
We will pay a price as Europeans anyway. Whatever happens, because Brexit is just a lose-lose situation. I think the European Union has negotiated very cleverly to get Britain within the customs union but out of the common market, no free movement of people. That's what people were worried about in Britain. You said it in your opening question to me. So the European Union has given May something she can negotiate on. It's not their fault that she's not going to be able to get it through Parliament.
Right.
John, I asked earlier about May's biggest mistake. Mm. What about the EU's? What about Brussels' biggest mistake?
I think that the European Union side has maybe been a bit slow to communicate its interests in this negotiation, to try to explain to the British population why they're behaving in that way. And I think also the EU side, if it did ultimately want to try to find a way of keeping Britain close to the European Union in some way, that sometimes its tone has been a little bit brutal and a little bit harsh. But maybe the European Union has to do that because it's respecting its own interests. Looking backwards now, I think the European Union, I agree with Alan, has negotiated this extremely well, has stood united, is well prepared. Michel Barnier has been an extremely professional negotiator. So actually the European Union side overall, I must say, has performed above my expectations in this negotiation so far.
Alex, Angela Merkel has said she's staying away from the summit on Sunday if there's any sign that other countries are looking for last-minute tweaking on this deal. And by that, she does not mean only Britain.
No.
What do you think? Are we actually going to see that summit take place in an orderly fashion?
Yes, I think it will take place, because I think that the EU are going to persuade Spain and France and the other countries who are concerned about what's going to happen in the future with
the UK. They're talking about fishing rights.
They're talking about fishing rights, yeah. Because at the moment that's not included in this deal, and they're worried they're not going to have access to British waters. Spain suddenly bringing up Gibraltar, which, by the way, was always an issue, and which Brexiteers are annoyed wasn't mentioned before when Northern Ireland was. So I think that there are very big, real issues, but I still think it's going to go ahead on Sunday and they will reach agreement because the 27 have been united.
Alan, we heard Juncker saying in that report just now that the EU is prepared for a disorderly, no-deal Brexit. Do you think it really is?
No, I think that's posturing. Just like, by the way, the hardliner was posturing. It's for certain sections of the European public which want to be, and it's also for Britain, of course. He's saying, well, okay, you do it, we'll see what happens. I don't think Europe is prepared, but it should prepare. My suggestion would be to say, okay, go, we'll still behave as if the customs union was in place. You can still export to us and you can come back to this deal if you want to. It's up to you. So push push the responsibility firmly towards the Brits.
But the question is, when does the pain kick in and where does the pain kick in? And so if there are queues of trucks lining up in Dover or there's a...
No pharmaceuticals.
That type of thing. Or no legal arrangement to allow the planes to fly, for example, because if Britain is outside of the European aviation safety area, those kind of things, that pressure will come to bear much more quickly on the UK side than will come to bear on the European Union side. We're not going to be running out of drugs in Berlin.
So speaking of pain, last question to all of you with a request for a very short answer. Our title asks, is this the battle for Britain? How will Britain be different 5 years from now? How will EU-UK relations be different 5 years from now? Alex?
Oh, my goodness. It so depends whether Brexit happens. If it does happen, the UK is going to be desperately trying to get this a free trade agreement with the EU and get access to everything it has at the moment, and it's going to be extremely difficult. If Brexit doesn't happen, who knows?
Alan?
I know what has to happen. It has to happen is that the West has to stick together and, you know, whatever it takes. And the West means the present European Union plus the United States. It doesn't look like that at the moment. That's what we have to concentrate minds on.
Britain 5 years from now is still going to be a politically very divided and complicated place, looking to a certain extent inward. I do think, however, that Britain putting its multitude of problems right, it's easier to do that if Britain doesn't Brexit. And that's still possible.
Thank you very much to all of you for being with us. And thanks to all of you out there for joining in. See you soon.